From the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done.
Welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news, you'll hear about corporations, government agencies, and people who are killing the planet, and folks who have the detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, or web addresses, so please get a pencil or pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this isn't couch potato radio. It's activist radio, and I'm asking you to take down the information and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls when you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down at the Dragon at the road blockade. If you do have information, news, comments, or announcements for Earth First Radio, please keep that pencil handy and listen for the contact information towards the end of the show. All right, announcements. Here they are. Looking for a job? The Appalachian Restoration Campaign is looking for a job, looking for somebody to help them out. It's you're going to do 10% administrative duty, 50% program guidance, and 20% communication, and 20% fundraising. There is a salary, about $19,000 a year, plus health coverage, major holidays, 4 weeks paid vacation, all kinds of stuff. Beautiful location in the Blue Ridge Mountains. This is a project of Heartwood, and let me tell you where to write if you want this job. You must have your resume, cover letter, and three references received by February 29th at Appalachian Restoration Campaign, P.O. Box 2786, Charlottesville, Virginia, 22902. That's ARC, P.O. Box 2786, Charlottesville, Virginia, 22902. Or you can send email to Scurry, S-C-U-R-R-Y, at firstva.com. That's Scurry at firstva.com. And it is a full-time position. Looks like for somebody who wants to work in Virginia, that's great. Okay, the Earth First Activist Conference is coming up February 10th through February 13th, and for those of you who know California, you know that the directions in the Earth First Journal are bunk. Absolutely bunk. Here are the correct directions for getting to the Earth First Organizers Conference. Get yourself to Baker, California, which is located on I-15 between Riverside and Las Vegas. Once in Baker, turn south on Kel Baker Road. That's K-E-L-B-A-K-E-R Road, which is short for the Kelso Baker Road. Proceed 35 miles south to Kelso, and then continue right on through town for another 7.2 miles. 7.2 miles past the town of Kelso. And you'll see a dirt road with a sign. Take a right and go to the end of the road. There will be some directions out there in the middle of the desert for you. Once again, this is February 10th through the 13th. You will need to bring food, water, firewood, $20, and a good attitude. Okay, if you're looking for ride-sharing information, call Delilah at 541-312-3453. That's Delilah, 541-312-3453, or send email to kitchenwitchrune at yahoo.com. That's kitchenwitch, R-U-N-E, at yahoo.com. There are some travel money available, okay? Also coming up is the On February 12th is a demonstration against the Tennessee Valley Authority's filthy Kingston Coal facility in eastern Tennessee. TVA is killing the Southern Appalachian Highlands with their coal operations. This is a nonviolent public protest held at noon for a couple of hours. You want further information? Call 423-633-8483 for more information. That's the demonstration at TVA's Kingston Coal facility, February 12th at noon for a couple hours. Once again, the information number is 423-633-8483. And this is sponsored by the River Faction of Catua Earth First. Coming up February 13th in Portland, Oregon, is a workshop on forest protection presented by BARC. You'll be getting an overview of the National Forest Timber Sale process, a lesson on drafting comments, and a training on monitoring the timber sales on the ground, otherwise known as ground truthing. Once again, February 13th from 1 to 4 p.m. in Portland, Oregon at the Snake and Weasel, 1720 Southeast 12th Avenue, just south of Hawthorne. Boy, that's hard to say. And if you'd like more details, contact Greg at BARC at 503-331-0374. That's 503-331-0374. Or send your email to dyse@teleport.com. That's dyse@teleport.com. Public comment period for the Yosemite Valley Draft Merced River Plan has been released. And the public comment period is open. There are some public hearings still remaining to be had here in California, but the draft Merced River Plan was ordered by the court as a result of the Sierra Club and MERG's Mariposans for Environmentally Responsible Growth lawsuit against Bruce Babbitt, Secretary of the Interior, and the National Park Service. The judge found the NPS violated both the Environmental Protection Act and the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act. So this plan has got to be amended to be good, okay? Anyway, if you'd like to attend a hearing coming up the end of January, January 31st at the Mammoth Lake High School, and in Bakersfield on February 1st at the Sheraton Four Points. San Diego on February 2nd at the Hanalei Hotel, Los Angeles at the Autry Museum of Western Heritage. That's February 3rd, February 5th at Palo Alto at the Hyatt Ricky's, Berkeley at James Kinney Park and Recreation Center, Sacramento at the Holiday Inn Northeast, and Merced on February 9th. All right. And I'll do more of these next week, all right, because there are more hearings coming up, but we need to cut our announcement time. All right, already did that one. All right, the Plum Creek Timber Company has applied for another incidental take permit, this one for bull trout and salmon across the company's remaining Washington, Idaho, and Montana timberlands. The permit would allow Plum Creek to kill, harm, or otherwise take various imperiled salmon, trout, and other species, and generally trash their habitats. This is part of a mitigation plan known euphemistically as a habitat conservation plan. Your written comments concerning the Plum Creek Draft HCP need to be received by February 15th. Send your comments to Ted Koch, K-O-C-H, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, 1387 South Vinell Way, that's V-I-N-N-E-L-L, number 368 in Boise, Idaho, the zip code 83709. Once again, that address is Ted Koch, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, 1387 South Vinell Way, number 368 in Boise, Idaho, 83709. And another place to send comments would be Bob Reese, R-I-E-S, National Marine Fisheries Service. Again, 1387 South Vinell Way, number 377 in Boise, Idaho, 83709. And it would be a good thing to ask for a full 90-day comment period, because this one was rather short, okay? If you'd like more information, contact American Lands. Their phone number, 503-978-0511. That's 503-978-0511, or Western, or WAFCFPB, WAFCFPB, or FBP, excuse me, at teleport.com. Let's get into action news here. An environmental activist was knocked down by the Montana Department of Livestock last week as the Department of Livestock attempted to haze a bull buffalo outside Yosemite National Park. Buffalo Field Campaign volunteer Andrea Reitzel says she approached the agent to ask a question. She was standing in front of the agent when he ran into her with his snowmobile, knocking her to the ground, Reitzel reports, and she intends to press charges. On Tuesday afternoon, three Department of Livestock agents on snowmobiles, accompanied by an officer from the Gallatin County Sheriff's Department, were trying to haze the buffalo away from the south side of Madison River. To prevent the transmission of brucellosis, a disease that causes miscarriages and stillborn calves, from buffalo to Montana's cattle, the state either shoots or captures buffalo that cannot be hazed back into the park. The state's position is not endorsed by the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, a federal body responsible for maintaining the state's brucellosis-free status. We don't feel there's a need to kill every bison that comes out of the park, says APHIS spokesperson Patrick Collins. Because bulls cannot transmit the disease, APHIS considers them low risk and says their presence will not jeopardize Montana's brucellosis-free status. The bull, which the Buffalo Field Campaign says left the park less than a week ago, was on national forest land designated as a wildlife habitat. It is unclear whether the Department of Livestock intended to capture the buffalo or haze him back into the park, the group said. And last week, five activists were sentenced for arrests related to road blockades in the Otter Wing timber sale in Idaho. Against the defendant's request, Judge Boyle, a federal magistrate, gave everyone 1 year of probation and suspended sentences of varying lengths from 10 to 45 days. Only three activists immediately had to serve time in jail. Molly got 13 days, Locust got 13 days, and Wendy got 8 days. Everyone gave beautiful statements about why they were arrested and why wild areas are worth protecting from management. Here's a little bit of Molly's statements. I have been convicted of a crime that I have committed before, a crime that I am ready to commit again, a crime that I encourage others to commit as readily as I would, a crime of defending the last contiguous roadless area of the lower 48 states. I stood on the line of what Edward Abbey called, thus far and no farther. All right. And let's move right into action news. The Animal Liberation Front launched multiple attacks on Long Island's fur merchants Thursday morning last week. Seven fur stores across two counties were targeted with spray paint and other acts of economic sabotage. In a letter sent to the Long Island chapter of the Animal Defense League and obtained by the Environment News Service, the ALF says stores were targeted in support of 14 anti-fur protesters who were arrested and charged by Sheboygan County Police in Wisconsin earlier last week. After protesting at a fur farm, the protesters and the ALF opposed the slaughter of 40 million animals a year for the fur industry. The ALF is an international movement of people who encourage direct action against animal abuse, such as liberating animals from fur farms and pet stores and destroying associated property. In the attack, logs were thrown through the front window of Bayshore Furriers of Huntington. Windows were also broken at Garden City and Cold Spring Hills fur stores. Stores in Elwood, Jericho, and Westbury had locks glued shut, and the slogans "Fur is Murder, ALF," and "In solidarity with the Sheboygan 14" written on the walls of their buildings and billboards. The ALF stated that this was, quote, part of an open-ended attack on all aspects of the animal abuse industry, and we will not stop until all life is free from exploitation and abuse. Here in California, genetics activists uprooted a field of genetically engineered strawberries last week, the first anti-genetic engineering action in Santa Cruz County. A band of activists destroyed a field of genetically modified strawberries in Watsonville last week, marking the first anti-genetic engineering activist in Santa Cruz County, California. The activists, known as the Francia Freedom Fighters, Francia, by the way, means strawberry in Latin. Uprooted and chopped about half of the strawberry plants and suspicious grasses, also thought to be genetically engineered in a test field at the headquarters of Plant Sciences Incorporated. The freedom fighters scattered organic seeds in the wake of the destruction. This activism in Watsonville, California, is the 21st known action against genetically engineered crops and multinational biotechnology corporations during the last year, but the first against what genetics spokespeople state are numerous genetically engineered crops in Santa Cruz County. All right, we'll have more news later on about that. The Earth Liberation Front has claimed responsibility for a fire last week that destroyed a house in the Sterling Woods development of the Bloomington, Indiana area. An estimated $200,000 in damages was done, an ELF statement obtained by the Environment News Service says. The house was targeted because the sprawling development it is located in is in the Lake Monroe watershed. This is the drinking water supply for the town of Bloomington, Indiana, and the surrounding area. It is already being jeopardized by existing development and roads. The arsonist torched one house that, when finished, was to be worth $700,000. No sprawl ELF was painted on the developer's sign. A police investigation is underway. The Earth Liberation Front is an international underground organization that uses direct action to stop what it considers to be, quote, exploitation and destruction of the natural environment. Other recent actions by ELF include a $400,000 fire at Michigan State University on December 31st of last year and the burning of Boise Cascade's Northwest headquarters in Monmouth, Oregon on December 25th, and the $12 million destruction suffered by Vail Resorts Incorporated in Colorado in October of 1998. From Manchester, New Hampshire, 8 environmental and human rights activists were arrested last week for staging a sit-in at Vice President Al Gore's presidential campaign headquarters in Manchester, New Hampshire. The protesters want Gore to use his connections with Occidental Petroleum, also known as Oxy, to stop the U.S. corporation from drilling on indigenous Uwa lands in Colombia. The group says Gore holds about $500,000 in Oxy stock and has received campaign contributions from the company. Since January 19th, at least 500 and as many as several thousand Colombian soldiers, recently reported to be 5,000, have been occupying an area of the traditional territory to which the Uwa hold legal title. On Tuesday, the Colombian army forcibly evicted dozens of Uwa from their land using helicopters, and 3 Uwa people are now reported missing. From Montreal, Canada, January 21st, around 10:30 in the morning, in the Salon des Huffetres of the Intercontinental Hotel in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, Joyce Groot, president of Biotech Canada, and also president of the World Coalition of the Biotechnology Industry, got her sweet natural cream pie at the opening of the conference on the biosecurity protocol being held in Montreal, until January 28th. Miss Groot doesn't have to worry. Our genetically modified pie was tested on a dozen other guinea pigs before hers. We're added to this pie a democracy gene, a respect of the natural world gene, and finally a gene that will heal the divine superiority complex over nature. Isn't the desire for improving the vegetal world, the animal world, and now the human world an insanity? These capital-O scientists, financed by public funds, fiscal treatment in Canada for research and development in this sector is the best among the industrial countries, are forcing their frankenfood on us. We're the lab rats, you and me, without any public consultation or debate. What about transnationals in this coalition? There's 2,300 of them in 130 countries, like the infamous Monsanto, that doesn't even serve its frankenfood in its own cafeteria. Oh boy. And a couple of days later, in West Montreal, Alan Rock, Minister of Health, received his just desserts from Agent Sapai of Ententarstis, the pioneers, in the form of a sweet lemon meringue pie. This was another gesture to denounce our government's position on genetically engineered foods as they attend the Biosecurity Protocol conference being held last week. I guess it's going on this week, too. We are being force-fed genetically engineered foods with the consent of the Minister of Health, so we decided to force-feed him with the finest of pies. Rock could not tell whether the pie was made with transgenic ingredients. That is precisely the problem with genetically engineered foods. We never know, but don't worry, the Minister of Health has approved of all this. Last year, Robert Shapiro of Monsanto CEO. Last Friday, Joyce Groot, president of Biotech Canada. And today, Alan Rock. And tomorrow, who knows? We hope that all of the delegates enjoy their week as they decide the fate of the genetic engineering world behind closed doors. Pie high, the pie is the limit. Kiki poo poos. If you want to see pictures, they're at www.dsuper.net/tildeaboyeur. That's aboyeur/tart.html. Sounds like fun. In other action news, this is an action alert. In 1908, Congress passed a law which required 25% of the revenues from timber sales on national forests to be allocated to rural communities for public education and road maintenance. But by doing so, they made rural schools addicted to timber revenue from public land deforestation, a disturbing relationship which works to the great advantage of the timber industry, but not to children's education. Last fall, the House passed the Timber Industry's Dream Bill, H.R. 2389, which only increases timber sales on national forests and hands decision-making control over to local special interests, their timber industries. Now, big timber supporters in the Senate plan to pass a similar bad bill, Senate Bill 1608, the Wyden-Craig Bill, through the Senate in late January or February. Your help is needed to stop this. Contact or write your U.S. senators today and urge them to take action, too. Vote down Senate Bill 1608, the Wyden-Craig Bill, and any other legislation that ties rural school funding to logging money and provide direct payments to rural education from the federal treasury and end timber sales on our national forests. Here's a number, 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121, and ask for your senator. Brought to you by the John Muir Project. Their number is 626-792-0109. That's 626-792-0109 for more information. Let's move right on into animal news here. West Coast groundfish stocks have been declared a commercial fishery failure by the Commerce Secretary William Daley. The official determination comes after a sharp decline in catches of groundfish, principally a wide variety of rockfish, from California to Washington. Our challenge now is to minimize economic and social impacts on fishing communities while protecting and rebuilding groundfish stocks, Daley said. This determination is the first step in the process of securing funds from Congress to assist fishermen who have been hit hard in the past several years. West Coast fishermen have seen catches for the entire industry go from a 20-year average of about 74,000 tons to less than 36,000 tons last year, and landings for this year are projected to be below 27,000 tons. Many of the species take a long time to mature and reproduce, making population recovery a very lengthy process. The National Marine Fisheries Service said a major underlying cause for the current situation is a lack of basic scientific data about these fish, said and National Marine Fisheries Service Director Penny Dalton. If money is made available, we would like to work with fishermen to gather more data and improve our understanding of this valuable fishery. Natural causes, including five El Nino events since 1982, are believed to have contributed to the decline, making fishers eligible for federal disaster relief funds. West Coast fishermen have expressed interest in developing a program to buy out vessels or permits to reduce the pressure on fish stocks as they begin their recovery, according to Dalton. And wet potholes in the prairies are not just holes in the ground for migrating waterbirds. They are temporary homes. Environmental groups who appreciate this fact have forced the federal government to withdraw new criteria, which would have withdrawn wetlands protection for the potholes. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has said Thursday that the government has settled a lawsuit challenging the wetland determinations in South Dakota. The National Wildlife Federation and other environmental groups filed suit in South Dakota last year, challenging the way the wetland conservation provisions of the Food Security Act of 1985 were being implemented by the Natural Resources Conservation Service. On May 13th, the NRCS ordered its South Dakota field offices to change the criteria for identifying prairie wetlands. The new criteria would overlook protection for thousands of seasonal and temporary wetlands, the environmental group said. Our state's prairie potholes are absolutely essential for migratory waterfowl habitat, said Chris Hesla, executive director of the South Dakota Wildlife Federation, National Wildlife Federation state affiliate. lose that habitat, and you lose the ducks and other waterfowl that depend on it. All right, we're going to take a little musical break here while Uncle Dennis rests his voice. I think what we're going to do here is check out a song by Durrell Cherney. This one's called Sinkio.
Oh, Sinkio, you bear such a noble name. Oh, Sinkio, a testament to white man's shame. The boss at Georgia Pacific, he needs to make some dough. So sorry, California, those redwoods gotta go. Oh, Sinkio, you can't let them cut you down. Oh, Sinkio, they don't care that it's sacred ground. They massacred the Indians, they stole the land they left. Come to tell us that I finished with their left. Well, Sinkio, your spirit is so great. Well, Sinkio, I can't believe this is your fate. The boss at Georgia Pacific, he likes to feel his might, but none can match the power of Mother Nature's might. Well, you don't care. Well, Sinkio, your agent wants to cut you bare. Someday his own grandchildren will walk on barren soil, while from the shorelines they can watch the oil rigs dig for oil. Oh, Sinkio, we cannot let this be. Well, Sinkio, we can't let them touch one tree. The mother must not suffer for the profit of a few. Hey, boss at Georgia Pacific, we might just clear cut you. Well, Sinkio, well, Sinkio.
And Earth First Radio will be right back. Stay tuned.